This morning I would like to introduce you to three people. If you've not yet met them, you work with them, you live with them, you know them, just maybe never have recognized them as such. Solomon calls them the simpleton, the scorner, and the sluggard. And we all know them. We all see them. Unfortunately, sometimes one of the three, if not all of the three, live within our bodies, and they control us. But this morning we want to look at them from God's perspective and to begin to develop God's perspective towards them so that we might live helping them to grow as people and as Christians rather than to be reacting to them. And so this morning, as we spend these few moments together, let's endeavor to have God's perspective on our three friends, the simpleton, the scorner, and the sluggard. Let me first of all give you a definition of the simpleton. It's one with which we can work and one which will help us understand who the simpleton is. The simpleton is the person who's easily led to make decisions. He's easily led to make decisions because he or she never makes a decision. That's the simple person, easily led to make decisions because they never make decisions. Now turn back in your book of in your Bible to the Proverbs chapter 1, verse 32. And we'll be looking at a number of Proverbs this morning, so you may want to keep your Bible open to that great book. Proverbs chapter 1. Chapter 1, verse 32. And here we begin to see the characteristic that's so true of the simpleton, that he or she avoids making decisions. Verse 32, chapter 1. For the simple are killed by their turning away, and the complacence of fools destroys them. Now over to chapter 14, verse 15, please. Chapter 14, verse 15. The simple believes everything, but the prudent looks where he is going. Now, if you think about it, realistically this morning, we begin to realize that to make sound decisions takes a measure of discipline. To say yes or to say no takes a measure of discipline. Because to say yes to something means that we must say no to something. To say no to something means that by definition we must say yes to something else. And yet Solomon is telling us this morning that the simpleton avoids the discipline of decision making. He or she looks at the issue and then walks away from it. And it's interesting, isn't it not, that there are many people in the body of Christ who can make decisions in their careers and in their occupations, and yet when it comes to spiritual matters, literally live as simpletons because they refuse to make a decision for or against God. They refuse to make a decision for spiritual growth. And yet it's interesting, to not make a decision is, in fact, to make a decision. If you come to me this morning and offer to give me £1,000, and you say to me, this is yours, all you have to do is to accept it. Make a decision and take it. If I respond to you by saying, I can't make a decision, I, in fact, have made a decision. And so it's so very important for us to understand when we refuse to make decisions, we in fact are making decisions. And Solomon is saying to us that it is the simple person who refuses to discern the right and wrong of an issue. It's the simple person who refuses to discern the facts and then respond to what is right and refuse to adhere to what is wrong. I have a friend in my church who I think is a spiritual simpleton. And he has gotten himself into all kinds of trouble in his business. In fact, he has even been guilty of fraud if another Christian brother would choose to pursue him in litigation. And his problem is that he is a spiritual simpleton. He refuses to make a decision. So if you would come to him and say, could you help me? Would you help me in my business? Specifically, would you help me sell my car, because he deals in cars? He cannot say no, even though he has more business than he can possibly handle. And so he always says yes. And he has now gotten himself in all kinds of trouble to the point that he is ready to begin bankrupt proceedings. Because he is a spiritual simpleton. I am grateful that he has finally recognized the error of his way and is now being willing to get help so that he can grow and no longer function as a simpleton. But all of his problems have come about because he is a person who refuses to make a decision. Now, it's interesting as well that Solomon says to us that the simple person does have a choice. Turn back to chapter 9, Proverbs chapter 9. And I want us to see here the difference between a choice for wisdom and a choice for the world's value system. Chapter 9, verse 4. Now, to set the context, look to verse 1. Because here Solomon is saying to us that wisdom is reaching out to us. Wisdom has built her house. So there is the context. Now down to verse 4. This is wisdom speaking. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. To him who is without sense, she says, come eat of my bread. There's wisdom, or we might say Jesus Christ incarnate, saying to the simple person, you do not have to continue living the way you're living. There is an alternate form of life that makes so much more sense. Indeed, it's the right way to live. Follow me. But look over to verse 16. To set the context, look back to verse 13. A foolish woman is noisy. She is wanton and knows no shame. Some commentators say that this is a picture of a woman without any morals. Some commentators say that this is a picture of the world's value system. Either way, the point is made. So here is the immoral woman calling out to the simpleton, or the world's value system calling out. Verse 16, whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And to him who is without sense, she says, stolen water is sweet, etc. Now here's the picture. The simpleton is walking down the road of life. On one side, the wisdom of the Lord Jesus Christ is calling out, come to my house. On the other side of the street is the world's value system crying out, come to my house. And a choice has to be made. And because until we make a decision to receive Jesus Christ into our lives and allow Him to function as the Lord of our lives, we live in the world's value system. To not make a decision for Jesus Christ is to make a decision to continue to live by the world's value system. So it's so very important for those of us who would say of ourselves, with humility of course, we are maturing, growing Christians, and we want to have a ministry in the lives of other people. As we meet people in the course of our lives who are simple, it's incumbent upon us that we would say to them, do you recognize you have to make a decision in life? You cannot ignore making this decision. It's a decision between the wisdom of God and the world's value system. And to make no decision is indeed to make a decision to live according to the world's value system. And it's important for us also to understand that God asks of the simpleton that a decision be made. Every one of us, as free moral agents, must make that decision. Now, with that in mind, as some characteristics of the simpleton, let's look to his or her future. Go back to chapter 1, verse 4. For I think sometimes, as maturing Christians, we react against the simpleton rather than having God's perspective on him or her. But look to verse 4 of chapter 1, for it's important that we understand how God used the simpleton. As the Proverbs were read earlier this morning, we see that they were written, verse 4, that prudence may be given to the simple. There's God's view of the simpleton. There's God's desire for the simpleton. There's God's dream for the simpleton, that he or she would become a prudent person. And I'm wondering this morning, as one who would say of myself, not that I've matured as much as I would want to, but as a person who would say, it is my desire to be a maturing Christian. Is it not true that each of us need to think again relative to verse 4 as we view those people in our lives who we would characterize as simpletons and say to them, God has given His word that you, my friend, could become prudent and no longer stumble along life, stubbing your toe and bruising your nose as you fall, that you can make prudent decisions for life. On the other hand, if the simpleton refuses to make that decision, then they will fall. To chapter 19, verse 25. Chapter 19, verse 25. Strike a scoffer, and the simple will learn prudence. Reprove a man of understanding, and he will gain knowledge. Now notice in verse 25, that Solomon is saying to us that sometimes the simpleton does not learn with a soft word, with a casual word, with a spiritual blessing of, I hope you will be different. Rather, he or she only learns as they see the scoffer struck. Or another way of saying it, they only learn and they only allow God to change their lives as they see in three-dimensional color what is going to be their life if they don't change. And if they don't change, they fall. So it's so very important for us as people who would minister to the simpleton, as we would encourage them, that we say to them, please understand God has given to you His word that you may be prudent. And if you don't learn a simple lesson, then He may bring you into the point where you see real tragedy in your life or in the life of someone else to be a stark picture, a dramatic picture of what your life will become if you don't make this decision for Jesus Christ. And then once again we say, please understand, my friend, to make no decision is to make a decision. Now there's a second person that we want to meet this morning. It's the scoffer or the scorner. Some of your translations may say the scorner or the scornful. A very quick working definition of the scorner would be a person who hates correction, is insolent, proud, and destructive. The scorner hates correction, is insolent, is proud, and is destructive. Hates correction, is insolent, proud, and destructive. And by destructive, I'm saying destructive to him or herself, and destructive to other people as it relates to relationships. Now, there are three things that we need to know about the scornful person. First of all, the scorner or the scoffer is a law unto themselves. Turn back to chapter 1, verse 22. To begin to see this thought that Solomon presents to us, that the scorner is a law unto themselves. They have no higher authority over their lives. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? And how long will scoffers, notice this, delight in their scoffing? On to chapter 13, verse 1. Chapter 13, verse 1. A wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. A scoffer does not listen to rebuke. And then finally, chapter 15, verse 12. Chapter 15, verse 12. A scoffer does not like to be reproved. He will not go to the wise. In each of these three verses that we've seen this morning, we see this context, that somewhere in the life of the scoffer or the scorner, wisdom is presented. It's not something that's hidden from the scornful person. It's there. It's obvious. It's available. But in each instance, the scoffer refuses to accept the wisdom of God. Why? Because the scoffer is a law unto himself. The scoffer is a law unto herself. And this person would say of themselves, non-verbally, if not verbally, I have no need for any other law or any higher law or any higher wisdom over my life, because I am a law unto myself. I need no one. I need no other wisdom. I am all of the wisdom that I need. If a scoffer has that attitude, then obviously they're not going to learn. Look to chapter 9, verse 7. Chapter 9, verse 7. He who corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse. He who corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse. Verse 8. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Conversely, reprove a wise man, and he will love you. Look to chapter 14, verse 6. A scoffer seeks wisdom in vain, but knowledge is easy for a man of understanding. And here Solomon is saying to us that wisdom is all around. And the scoffer would say of himself, I want to be wise. I want to know God if there is a God. But he or she doesn't find God or doesn't find that wisdom, because indeed in their heart they don't want to know wisdom. All they want to do is to pontificate and tell those people in their hearing how great they are. Let me give you an example of this. The headmaster of our children's school asked me to serve on a committee with other lay people that relating to some of the budgetary concerns of the school. And I met a lady on this committee. It was interesting to me. As I got to know her, I concluded that she was a scoffer. Out of his hearing, she criticized the headmaster of our children's school. And where we live, there is a school district where there are a number of schools that are an autonomous organization. We raise our own budget. We hire our own employees. And we have a superintendent who is the chief administrator of that district. She criticized our school superintendent, our district superintendent. The school board are elected from the constituency. She criticized the school board. Now, she's attacked the headmaster, the school superintendent, the school board, and then one night we were having a discussion before the meeting began about the highway department that needs to build a new highway over a lake. She walked in at the end of that conversation and said, oh, the state highway department. She's talking about the whole state of Minnesota, the whole highway department. Oh, the state highway department. They don't know anything. Then later she said to me, we're just in the process of finishing a new sanctuary. We'll seat 1,000 people. So it's a fairly ambitious project. She said to me, just after one of the people on the committee congratulated me for the choice of architecture and all of the other amenities of the building, she said, oh, you have put that building in the worst of places. And in addition to that, it's a round building. Well, it's not a round building, and if she had taken the time to look at it, she would know. It's not a round building. Don't ask me what shape it is. I don't know. I just know it's not round. Here's my point. Doesn't make any difference what the discussion is. This lady has a negative word about the person or the issue being discussed. Do you want to talk about the school board that we elected? She has a negative word about them. Do you want to talk about the new church building that many hundred people decided on? She has a negative word about it. Do you want to talk about the superintendent of our school district who has a PhD and is quite well known around the whole country in educational circles? She has a negative word towards her. Think it through. In actual fact, what this lady is verbalizing every time she opens her mouth is, I don't like myself, therefore I'm going to criticize someone else and the decisions they have made to elevate myself in the eyes of other people. For didn't Jesus himself say, love your neighbor as yourself? And of course, if I don't love myself, then I'm going to be figuring out how to criticize you to cover my poor self-image. And so there we get an insight into the scoffer. It's one who becomes a law unto themselves because they refuse to submit to the law of God. And then finally, the third person we want to meet this morning, the sluggard. Now let me say briefly that I understand that none of you are sluggards. And you've never been sluggardly in your lives. We're just here this morning to see how the other half lives. I just want to share that with you. But here's a working definition of the sluggard. It's the one who accomplishes nothing because of no self-discipline. The sluggard is the one who accomplishes nothing because of no self-discipline. And notice this, and their low regard for the Lord. The sluggard accomplishes nothing because of their lack of self-discipline and their low regard for the Lord. First of all, the sluggard is the person who never begins anything. Chapter 6, verse 9. Chapter 6, verse 9. Now remember, we are not looking at ourselves this morning. We're looking at the other half. Please, I don't want you to get angry at me before I finish here. Chapter 6, verse 9. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? And here's the answer. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. And that's a perfect description of the sluggard. I mean to do that tomorrow. I mean to do that tomorrow. The sluggard never begins anything. When he does, turn over to chapter 26, verse 15. We finally find the sluggard out of bed. I don't know how it happened, but he did get out of bed and stumbled down the street to the fish and chip shop. Here's a picture of what happens at the fish and chip shop. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. It wears him out to bring it back to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer discreetly. Solomon, at this point, is showing all of his cynicism about people who refuse to work, who refuse to be self-disciplined. And he's saying to this person, they never begin anything, and if they do begin something, they can't even finish it. Even a simple task like eating a few fish and chips. And yet, verse 16, they always have an answer. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer discreetly. So we walk into the fish and chip shop. We see the sluggard who is so tired and worn out from doing nothing that he can't raise the fish and chips to his mouth. And he has a better answer for why that is taking place than seven discreet people who are sitting by observing everything. Now it's very important for us as you turn to chapter 22 that we recognize that the sluggard refuses to face the truth. The sluggard always has an excuse for why he or she never accomplishes anything. It's always someone else's fault. Verse 13. The sluggard says, there is a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets. And the sluggard is not honest. Chapter 15, verse 19. This is probably the most graphic picture between the showing the difference between the sluggard and the person who accomplishes something in life that Solomon has presented to us. Notice there is no difference in the circumstances of life. There is no difference in the road that's traveled. All of the difference is right here in the mind. Notice the sluggard's attitude. Verse 19 of chapter 15. The way of a sluggard is overgrown with thorns, but the path of the upright is a level highway. Here are two people, one who is successful and one who is not successful because he or she has made the decision to be a sluggard, walking down the same highway. We talk to the sluggard and say, why didn't you accomplish anything? And he or she says to us, oh, woe unto me, the whole highway is overgrown with thorns. I could barely get started. But you talk to the person who has completed the journey, who has moved to the top of the class, who has been successful, and they say of the very same highway, it was a level highway. I stumbled once in a while because there were some cobblestones a little too high in the road, but I made it. I finished. And you see, the sluggard is not honest with himself. The sluggard does not face the truth. We are all required, unless we have some debilitating illness or incapacity, to put our hands in the fish and chips and to bring them to our mouth. And yet the sluggard will find some reason as to why that shouldn't be done. Now once again, obviously there are no sluggards here this morning. But we know sluggards. By the way, I just said that to catch your attention. Probably at times we feel like sluggards. But we know sluggards. And we need to love them enough to say, wise up, grow up, change, quit making excuses. In our church, I have to say to people, I'm sorry. You are just not doing the job. We need to get someone else. And it seems in the Church of Jesus Christ, there are people who like to have a title or who like to be in front of an audience on Sunday morning or at some other meeting, but don't like to do the kind of disciplined work in private that allows them the privilege of being in front of that group on a Sunday morning or at some other meeting where they would have an influence on people's lives. And we need to love people enough to confront them to say, listen, the party's over. We need someone who can get the job done. And one of the best expressions I ever heard was from a basketball coach at a college near where I used to live. And he caught one of his players breaking training rules. He was out after hours eating in a restaurant. And the coach came up to this friend of mine and said, Ron, you are off the team. You will be my friend on the street, but not in the basketball gym. That was his way of saying, I love you, I care for you, my friendship with you in no way is affected, but you are no longer on the team because you're a sluggard. And if you can't discipline yourself enough to keep a few simple training rules, then you cannot be on my team. That's a difficult thing to say, but Coach Wilson that day, or that evening, expressed his love for Ron and made him face the fact that he was a sluggard. Well, there you have it. The simpleton, the scoffer, and the sluggard. Personal application would be twofold this morning. First of all, let's make certain that we are allowing the grace of God to be so operative in our lives that it would never be said of us in any situation, that man or that woman is a simpleton. They refuse to make decisions. That it would never be said of us, that man or that woman is a scoffer. And that it would never be said of us, that man or that woman is a sluggard. And then secondly, let's recognize that God brings into our lives people who fall into those three categories. And instead of reacting against them, let's love them enough to ask God, how could I minister to this person? How could I help them to understand who they are? And I would be privileged, Lord, to be your vessel to help them take a step towards growth.